Well, hello there, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of the Better Than Fine podcast. I'm your host, Darlene Marshall, and top of the show, just going to ask you to do us a little bit of a solid. Here at NASM Podcasting Network, we really want to know what you think of not just this show, but all of the shows on the network. And so there is a link in the description of this show to a listener survey. I'm just going to ask you right here at the top of the show, if you don't mind, give me a solid, take a second, click that link, fill out the survey questions. It's pretty quick. And you get entered for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. So thank you very much for doing that. Now let's get on to the good stuff, huh? So today's episode is in response to some outreach that I got from Coach Kenrick Lynn, who's been a fan of the show, who's been following the content, interacting with me on Instagram. So shout out to Kenrick. Thank you for this excellent question. And just a quick plug, Kenrick on Instagram is Local Noon Enterprises, if you want to go check him out. So Kenrick reached out and asked me, is desire an emotion? And what he said was, to me, desire is a deep want for something. And I was intrigued when I read a psychology article that suggested desire was not an emotion all the time. And so, of course, I asked him for more information, for more nuance, because in my humble opinion, it depends on what it is you want and what's coming up for you. So is it desire for sex or water? Is it food cravings, right? Some of those are physiological drives. And he responded, your request for more is where the nuance lives. Sad, happy, angry would probably never be questioned as to whether or not they are emotions. To which I said, from a whole person perspective, they are more subtle than just emotion. And for the example I gave him was that hangry is being more irritable because you're overly hungry. The drive for food being unmet makes us more reactive to our environment. And then we have this excised emotional response. And in that way, it's not just pure emotion. So then Kenrick says, it reminds me of something else that came up, which was desire was more of a feeling than an emotion. And I'd love your thoughts on that. How do you conceptualize the difference between the two, emotions and feelings? And of course, the rest is history. Of course, now I have to do an episode on it. So also shout out to Kenrick, but also thanks, Kenrick. Thank you genuinely for your question. I thought it was a really interesting and compelling one, which is why we're doing a whole episode on this question about emotion and feeling and how that relates to desire and how that affects motivation. So let's get to it. Let's start parsing apart all of these different nuances because I think that's very exciting. And let's just start with, you got to give a baseline. We got to call the spade a spade. You might wonder, well, why does it matter if it's a feeling or an emotion? Why does it matter that there's a difference? And in my opinion, and I like to think it's an informed opinion. I like to think that, like, you know, I know things. That to be effective, whether we're talking about as a coach or working on yourself or just living your life as a full-blown adulting adult, if you want to be effective at whatever it is you're doing, it's having the capacity and the willingness to fully embrace nuance, right? Not everything is black or white or as simple as yes or no. There's nuance and details. And sometimes we're going to own what we know, and sometimes we're going to own what we don't know. And sometimes we're going to recognize that there's muddy water to parse out. So the sarcastically fun part of this is if you Google feelings or emotions, like what's the difference? You're going to find a lot of interchangeable content and definitions. You're going to find different content creators and websites out there that say, you know, emotions are this and feelings are that. And then somebody else will say, emotions are that and feelings are this. And that's very frustrating and confusing. You know, so one trusted website will say it one way, another one will say it another way. My favorite one, as I was just, you know, whenever I do an episode of the show, I go out, I'm like, okay, let me just see what's currently out there on the interwebs on this topic so I can add, you know, my flavor to it, but also a level of expertise. And a very well-known and well-respected website out there that has multiple articles on this content, on this topic, contradicts itself. So this, like I say, well-respected, well-reputed, we're not going to name names in this show because we just don't need the ire, is self-contradictory. So it makes sense that some people are going to be a bit confused by this topic, maybe even frustrated. And I know in the wellness space that so often we're encountering this frustration and a lack of clarity. And so what I want to do first is what we call operationalization. We're going to operationalize these words. That means that, and you see this whenever you're doing psychological research or sociological research, to operationalize a concept is to say, this is what it is and this is what it isn't, right? We're going to draw some clear boundaries on a term so that the full body of evidence on that term is talking about the same thing. Sometimes that's called a position paper. Sometimes it's done at the start of a research paper if you're researching a fairly emergent topic. And so if we operationalize, that's our like word of the day. Ah, every time I say operationalize, we'll all scream, yay. So we're going to operationalize some terms here. And this comes from psychology and from human behavior research. Emotions are quick, impulsive, often intense, somatic, so in the body, reactions to a given stimulus. Now, some operationalizations will say that that stimulus has to be external for it to be an emotion, but I disagree because I know I've had times in my life that if a thought comes up about something that really matters to me or is impacting me, I'll have a wave of emotion and reaction. I think about like grief is a really good example of that. And what comes with that quick, impulsive, somatic reaction is often a very specific physiological response. So I see something funny, unexpectedly humorous, I'm going to laugh, and I'm not going to necessarily be able to control that laughter. It's just going to come out of me. Something upsetting, I might scowl. I might have a defensive posture. Or another great example is you see something enticing, since we're talking about desire, and you blush. You have a flush of red to the skin. That's a physiological reaction. So emotions are these quick, impulsive, often intense reactions that often have a physiological external response. All right, so that's emotions. Feelings are typically an interpretation based on belief or experience or something we call your schema. Schema is the subconscious rules and beliefs of how the world works. And so feelings are therefore individual and subjective. They're shaped by our lived experience and they last longer than emotions. So if emotions are like a quick, powerful wave, feelings are more like the wave pool that's kind of churning, right? And related to these two, even though it's not directly from Kendrick's question, our conversation today related to this, we want to operationalize mood. So that's much more sustained. It's similar to emotion in that there's typically a set of somatic, right, body responses and physical expressions, though it's often far less intense than emotions. And mood, because it's sustained, can impact our outlook, even our behavior. And it can be impacted by our environment, our health, our belief system, our life circumstances as a whole. So if we go back to Kendrick's question on desire, I asked for more information because that word is also ambiguous and we also need to operationalize it. You're listening to the Better Than Fine podcast. We are now streaming live on NASM's podcast network here on YouTube. And for any of our live listeners, if you've got a question as I'm breaking down these concepts, you go right ahead and drop that in the chat because I would love to hear from our live listeners. And for anyone who's watching on the recording or listening along on the podcast feed, if you ever want to join us for a live show, they're Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time. All right. So I'd ask for more information about desire because that too is ambiguous and we need to operationalize it a little bit more. So let me give you some examples. If I have a quick attraction to someone, right? There's somebody who walks by and they smell real good and I'm going to have this wave of attraction. That desire is an emotion. But if I have a crush on someone, if I see them every couple of days and I start to look forward to seeing them and it carries me the rest of my day, I'm in a great mood. Well, that's a feeling. Or maybe it's a longing, something deeper. And I am aware that I can't reach them. I don't have access to them. It's unrequited. And it starts to sink me into a bit of a depression. That's a mood. So to answer Kendrick's question in the simple terms, it could be any of those things. And that's where the nuance gets really fun to play with. And then we really want to look at how does this show up in our lives? And in all of that nuance and complexity, how does it then affect our well-being? How does that affect how we show up in the world, interact with the world? And I'm assuming if you're listening to Better Than Fine that you're interested in a well-lived life, you're interested in a sense of fulfillment and wellness. So how does the feeling, emotion, desire thing impact all of that? Well, to understand those nuances and complexities in your own life, it means understanding both challenging and pleasant emotions, which is a major topic in positive psychology. Yahtzee, as a positive psychology practitioner, this is my wheelhouse. This is my jam. So it's part of why I got really excited when Kendrick reached out. So I was like, Yahtzee, I love talking about this stuff. So difficult emotions have a different neurological and action-oriented response than positive or pleasant emotions. And I'm going to break that down in a couple of different ways. So if, as I said that, it seemed like word salad, that's okay, because you're going to understand it in a second. So like I say, different emotions have different neurological and action-oriented responses than positive emotions. Shout out to Kendrick in the chat. So glad you tuned in. So challenging emotions have something called a specific thought action tendency. Essentially, that means that there's a specific stimulus, it causes a negative emotional response, and we have a hardwired reaction to it that can be overcome if you train yourself to be self-regulated, but we default to this specific thought action tendency. So someone violates a boundary, you experience anger, and anger's thought action tendency is to lash out or be defensive because we're trying to reinforce that boundary. If someone has more power than you, you perceive them to be more powerful, they are potentially threatening to you, the reaction is fear. And the thought action tendency is to attempt to do some kind of harm reduction or to flee. And I don't mean harm reduction like aftercare for trauma. I mean harm reduction like, oh, I'm gonna be deferential. I'm gonna speak in a different tone. I'm gonna posture in some way to tell them, oh, I'm not a threat. Please don't hurt me. Attempt at harm reduction. Or I'm gonna try to get away. Those are our fear hardwired thought action tendencies. Or for something maybe less extreme than those, if I experience a sense of loss, I mentioned grief a moment ago. We experience with loss a response of sadness, and that sadness causes a withdrawal to recoup from and recover from that loss. So if you think about times that you have been really sad, you might also recognize, well, I was sad in response to a particular loss opportunity or a person, something that you no longer had access to. And our impulse to withdraw from the world while we heal or recover or reorient ourselves, especially if it was something that caught us off guard. And a powerful enough emotion will then influence our feelings, right? It will be sustained enough that we'll start to reevaluate how we feel. Maybe if it's an emotion I don't understand, I might start to really dig into it. Or if it's an emotion I don't understand, I might have a defensive response. It might cause me to be afraid. Like, why did I react that way? Who am I right now? And if it takes long enough, it might impact our mood and even our sense of ourselves because there's a cascade here. And that's often where we start to get ambiguous in the language Because when does it go from an emotion to a feeling, from a feeling to a mood? Or when is an emotion intense enough to then affect my feelings? What does that look like? And this is something that shows up for all of us in all of our lives. It's deeply part of being human. And so, you know, if you hear people kind of colloquially being like, oh, you know, women are so emotional or men are so reactive, it's like, this is a human thing. We all have this, even if we've been taught to suppress the cascade, the feelings and the reactions. It's part of our human wiring, and it affects me too. And so let me give you a really concrete example. The details will be vague, but you'll hear the cascade in this example. I recently have someone that I deeply love and who I know very well be put in a situation where they were in danger, and they were put in that situation by someone whose job it was to keep them safe. And so after they were safe and I learned about the situation, I got profoundly angry, like a kind of anger that I had not felt in many, many years. It was very intense to the point that I didn't even think I could get that kind of angry anymore. And it went on for weeks, just anger and rumination. It brought up a lot of other stuff. I needed to go back to therapy, like just to deal with the intensity of what first was an emotion and then became feelings. And then it started to impact my mood. And then I'd have more emotions because my mood was impacted. And then I was ruminating a lot. And my husband, who we've been friends for a long time, but we've only been married for 2 years, he had never seen me like this before. And people who've known me for a really long time had seen me like this before, but for him, it totally caught him off guard. And, you know, my meta self, my ability to observe the situation, he struggled to reorient. And it's interesting now to reflect back and see the way that my mood of responding to that anger, the intensity of the mood shift, impacting him, his feelings, his negative surprise, and his struggle to reorient. And so if you follow this chain, as individuals, we have this chain of emotion to feeling to mood, but also as a group of people, we have the behavior of one person causing different reactions and then a chain of other people's reactions. And you can really see the way that one person's behavior can affect another and another and another, which is like I often say, humans are pack animals. Right? We're going to be impacted by one another. And it's part of what makes these teasing out of all of these nuances so challenging sometimes, but also such a rich and fulfilling opportunity for us to grow together. You're listening to the Better Than Fine podcast. I'm your host, Arlene Marshall. And today we are taking Kendrick's question about desire so that we can discuss feelings, emotions. Now we brought up moods. There's a lot here for us to play with. And so if this emotion stuff sounds interesting to you, then it's about to get even cooler. Positive emotions have a different set of neurological reactions in us as people. So whereas negative emotion has specific thought action tendency that, again, we can learn how to self-regulate and shift the response. But if you've hung out with toddlers before, you see a toddler get angry and they start hitting, right? Like it's wired in. Positive emotions have different reactions to them. And this comes directly from Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build theory, which we have talked about on the show a few times. So just a quick plug for people who are nerding out about this stuff and you want to go real deep. Episode 110 from June of 2022 is Emotions Are Information. And episode 176 from November of 2023, Jumpstarting Upward Spirals, that's Fredrickson's other theory that builds on broaden and build. And so if you want to explore this stuff, there you go, Yahtzee. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time here because we've covered it on the show before, but I don't want to leave anyone behind. So quick primer, essentially positive or pleasant emotional experiences don't narrow us down to specifics. They open us up. They make us more malleable and adaptable. So quick examples. Joy causes us to explore our environment and the people around us. We try new things. And so it makes it easier for us to learn stuff. We retain the information we learned. And then because it was a joyful experience, we want to repeat it. So joy is retain and repeat. serendipity, which is when we think of, oh, this fortuitous event just came together so lovely. We are prompted to savor it. And savoring, which there's also an episode on, if you want to check it out, causes us to deepen the experience that we're in and therefore boosts our memory. Trust, the action tendency for trust is a word that unfortunately has been co-opted to mean something different than the scientists intended in the beginning. So trust causes us to, someday this is going to get clipped on the internet and I'm going to be in trouble, groom. And it means like you think of like gorillas picking bugs off of each other's backs or young girls doing each other's hair or making friendship bracelets for each other. That's grooming behavior. And so when we trust someone and we want to be around them, we're going to trust them with our deeper selves, but even our like physical safety. And we're going to build through things like going shopping together or exploring our environment together. That builds a sense of mutual support and shared resources. Gratitude, which people talk about all the time, right? Gratitude is the feeling that something outside myself, without any action of my own, caused me to have some kind of boon or benevolence. And what gratitude prompts us to do is pro-social behavior. So somebody does something nice for us, we're more likely to go do something nice for somebody else. Pro-social behavior. And what that does is create a communal feedback loop. So you do something nice for me, I do something nice for somebody else, they do something nice for you, and it creates cohesion and deeper bonds in a group of people. So these are just some of the examples. There are many more of all the different ways that positive or pleasant emotional experiences actually open us up. Now you might be wondering, like, why does this matter? And how can it help me with my wellness and well-being? Again, I'm going to assume you listen to Better Than Fine because you want to live a more fulfilling life and you're not interested in doing it in, you're interested in doing that in a self-directed way, right? It's not about public policy or mass social change. Not that those things aren't important, but that's not what this show is about, right? You're not listening to this show to like learn how we radicalize public policy. It's a show about controlling what you personally can control while we recognize that we also function collectively, right? So we're going to give a nod to like social determinants of health and a recognition that the externals impact us. We're all living in systems. And also like that, my favorite quote from Hamilton, I am the one thing in life I can control. Okay. When we own that emotions are big, intense waves, we can also own that they will pass and that some of the waves are going to be manageable, right? We just, I don't know if you've spent time in the ocean. I think about the times I've spent in the ocean. You got big waves and you can like bounce on your toes and hop up and over them, right? It's fun. But you can keep your head above the wave. And then there's going to be some waves that you can't jump high enough and you have to dive through. And I know when I was a kid, the first time I ever went to the ocean, I didn't know what size wave I could handle. And there was a couple of times that I went to dive through the wave and it was too much and I got tossed around, right? The wave overwhelmed me. The waves that we know, we'll interpret them, we'll be able to make accurate feelings, interpretations about what those emotions mean. And they'll impact us in our lives in ways that we can manage. There will be some waves that we won't understand. We won't have a framework and a personal model for how to deal with them. And those we'll have to explore. Well, if we have the emotional intelligence, we'll have the EQ, we'll have the ability to explore those emotions, to make meaning out of them, and then they will become integrated feelings. And by integrated, I mean it weaves into the fabric of where we make meaning for ourselves, for our lives, for the greater world in a cohesive way. The big waves, the really, really huge ones, they can impact our feelings in waves that are harder to adapt to, especially if we don't have the frameworks to work with. And they might even shift our mood if mood is sustained long enough, it becomes disposition, right? So if you've had people that you've known who've gone through big life challenges and they feel overwhelmed by them, and then they just never seem to be quite the same, that's what that is. They struggled to learn from and integrate the big waves that all of us struggle with sometimes, right? That's part of being a human that lives to be a certain age, is you're going to have those big waves some, and sometimes they'll rock our idea of how we think the world works. You know, awe is profound, overwhelming self-transcendence. It's when we are tapped into the idea that something is even bigger than us and it transcends us, and we struggle to integrate that into our schema. If you do it successfully, it can create incredible meaning. Sometimes there's negative awe, where you feel completely overwhelmed by your smallness in the universe and it shakes you to your core. Then it becomes profound existential fear, right? So again, when I think of examples of myself, twice in my life, someone has tried to mug me. Both of them were in my 20s. The first time, I fought the guy off, but I was so afraid. It completely changed how I moved through the world as a young woman. I'm 6'1". I was 200 pounds. I was trained to fight at that point. I played collegiate rugby. I thought nobody's ever going to mess with the 6'2", 200-pound girl. But he had a weapon and he was absolutely ready to mess with me. And I was very lucky. I thought that those rules didn't apply to me because of my experience in the world. But I was very wrong. And it was a really big wave for me. And it really did change how I moved through the world. So when we understand that this is how these waves work, and we want to live a good life, a fulfilling life, that means learning skills to manage and ride these waves. And so I'll plug again, that's Emotions or Information, the episode from June of 2022. It's about learning how to read your emotions and interpret them and integrate them into your concept of the world and yourself. I want you to consider that as a way that you can create your own wave machine, right? You can learn how to produce these waves, how to understand these waves, how to ride these waves. But you can also decide that you want to shift your waves. And this is a lot of where positive psychology comes in. So I could decide, I want to feel more joy, more serendipity, more gratitude. That episode's November 2023. Awe is December of 2022. We've got lots of episodes on positive emotion and practices for generating them in your life. To build your own wave machine is to prime those emotions. And it doesn't work perfectly every time. But I want you to think of it. We're going to shift metaphors here. I know we've been talking about waves so far, but I want you to think about this now, like you're, instead of a wave machine, it's like a recipe. Using positive emotional priming activities is like a recipe that's really difficult. So you put in the ingredients, and you work on the skills involved. You get better and better ingredients, you get better and better at the skills, and eventually the recipe comes together, and then you can play with it, you can level it up, you can remix it, because now you're really great at that recipe. That's how I think about positive emotional priming, right? Like when I think about gratitude practice, I'm going to put in the ingredients and I'm going to see what outcomes I can get. And Kenrick just plugged in the chat that they were good episodes. So Kenrick's backing me up on this one. So my personal awe primer in my like recipe that I'm trying to make of my life, because I love awe. Awe is one of, to me, the most important emotions that I facilitate a few times a year. My primer is often in nature. So the Grand Canyon, the first time I went, huge awe experience. And then I took my little sister there a couple of years ago so I could watch her awe, and me just savoring her awe was a huge positive emotional experience. So you could choose to make that wave machine. I keep bumping back and forth between these two metaphors. And I want to add in, as we're wrapping up this episode, that this adage that I use in my work, and it comes directly from the philosophies that underpin positive psychology. The absence of the bad isn't the same as the presence of the good. So we need the skills to cope with challenges. When the big waves hit, do I know how to dive under and pop up the other side and be all right? Am I a good swimmer? I need those skills as a human being. And we also need the skills to actively seek out and facilitate positive emotional experiences, because those are the things that not only make life worth living, which I think is a phrase that we're often throwing out there. Oh yeah, it makes life worth living. Sure. It also is more adaptive. It bonds us. It keeps us cohesive and together. It makes it easier to learn. It makes life more interesting. It helps to combat boredom and malaise. So we need both set of skills. And my favorite line from another show, if you haven't watched Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix, go watch it. But the kind of mentor figure in Blue Eye Samurai at one point says, both can be true. Both things are true. You might have negative emotional experience and positive emotional experience from the same stimulus, from the same experience. You can deeply bond with someone while you're working through a challenge together. You can, I think of one of my friends unfortunately passed away earlier this year. And while I have profound grief for having been there with them at the end, I also got to watch their partner demonstrate a profound act of love in their care and support them in doing so. So it's okay if it's more than one thing. Things can be more than one thing, and you need positive emotional experience and the ability to cope with the challenges. Both are necessary for authentic integration, interpersonal connection, and facilitating a fulfilling life. So Kendrick and everyone else out there, Kendrick, thank you for the question. Everyone else, I hope that this has been a meaningful and rich exploration of that question, not just what is desire, because desire is more than one thing, but also what are feelings and emotions and how do they affect our well-being and our ability to have a fulfilling life? I want to remind you, take that listener survey. So go ahead and look at the show description, click the link, do it. You know you want to fill out that brief survey, not only about this show, but all of the NASM podcast network shows, and you get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Of course, I would love to hear your feedback or your questions. Don't let Kendrick be the only one that's asking questions. You can email me. It's info@darlene.coach. I also have Instagram. Darlene@darlene.coach is the easiest way to get my attention. Just shoot me a DM. I'm on LinkedIn. Of course, if you're a fan of the show, I hope that you'll subscribe. If you're here on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe and catch us back here every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hit that like button, share the show, tag me when you share. Thank you so much. Take good care of yourselves and be well.